Hi, thank you. My name's Danielle. I'm a compulsive overeater. really grateful for any opportunity that I can take that's gonna contribute to my abstinence and give me a chance to give service. So thank you. Today is 100 days of abstinence for me. So I love that it's landed on today because that wasn't planned. But yeah, 100 days of abstinence. So I was gonna just talk a little bit. Hopefully a little bit about my just some of my experiences in childhood and how that shaped my relationship with food. And then bring in my experience in recovery. So I was born to teenage parents who had known each other for 4 weeks when they met me, when they got pregnant with me. And they had a very volatile relationship, and they didn't stay together long. They were together for a year. In that time, my dad was an alcoholic and my mum had a drug addiction. They both went their separate ways, and they formed relationships with people who that they would stay with throughout my whole childhood. So my stepmom and my stepdad. In my dad's household, there was the addiction of there was a lot of food addiction. There was anorexia, and there was my dad was a compulsive overeater, and he would yo-yo diet a lot. And there was a very, very critical, a lot of shame, a lot of criticism, and that they both had a lot of trauma, and they really directed that at us. And I think there was a lot of hate towards me because, I represented a part of my dad's history that was maybe difficult for my stepmom to manage, and she really struggled to hide that. So that was a difficult relationship. And then in my mum's household, there was a lot of love, but there was a lot of addiction. So there was food addiction, sex addiction, drug addiction, spending, exercising. So it was a lot. So there was there was much love as there was. They did well with what they had, but there was, there were big emotions, a lot of paranoia, a lot of anger, a very explosive, a lot of unmanageability. So the combination of those two experiences, those two households, I kind of came away from that with the belief that I was, there was something very wrong with me at my core. I was unlovable. I had no value to give to this world. But that the way to get value was to achieve things and to be super productive and present yourself in a way that was going to attract love. But there was no mistake. I had no value, and I had to hide that because if that ever got exposed, then I wouldn't get any love. So that was quite painful to take that through my childhood and into my adulthood. And I definitely used food as a way to kind of, I always used to say I use food to put my skin back on. So I would it'd be in these experiences that would be so hard, and it would feel like it would strip me, and I would be in a lot of pain. And I would use the food to kind of put that armor back on me. Around the age of eight, my stepdad, his daughter came to live with us because her mum killed herself from heroin addiction. So again, it was just threaded all throughout my childhood. Addiction is the way through, and it's the way out. And if there was any, big emotions, then my stepdad would often have these rageful moments. Because he found it difficult to manage his emotions, and he would go into the next room, take drugs, he would come out, he would be a different person. So the message was very clear that if you are struggling with something, tap into something outside of yourself as a source of comfort, and that is your solution. But obviously, as a child, I didn't see the level of unmanageability that was just absolutely everywhere. Like the phone couldn't ring without my family going into full fight or flight mode because they were in so much debt, and they were always being chased by people. So there was that very real sense of paranoia. There was a lot of restriction at my dad's house. They were very image conscious. They were very obsessed with my way. If I, there would be, I would be sat down if I was going to go to their house, which it was every weekend. So I'd be back and forth. And if one of the children put on a pound, it would be very sternly spoken about, not to mention they're very upset about it. And so, there was a lot of obsession about my weight, even though I was actually a healthy weight. But it was around this time that I developed obsessive compulsive behaviors with food. And I remember because every night in my mum and stepdad's house was like a party. And I would have to make cups of tea for all of the people in the house. And I remember I developed this habit where I would, as the kettle was boiling, I would stand over the sugar pot. And I had this thing where I had to like check and count, and it would be my way of making me feel calm. And I used to put 2 spoonfuls of sugar into my mouth on this side, and then I would have to turn and put 2 spoonfuls of sugar into my mouth on this side. And if I couldn't get the feeling of the heap of the spoon the same, I would have to times it by two, and I would go all the way up to 16 and 16 on each side. And when I was writing this, I was working out how much that would have actually been, and that would have been 50 up to 50 teaspoons of sugar while the kettle was boiling. And I remember I would just feel absolutely just sick to my stomach, but it was just my way of making myself feel calm. At 14, I feel like that was my first kind of God reprieve. My stepsister moved out. I refused to go to my stepdad's house anymore. And so I never saw my stepmom again. And my mum, who was a very active, quite violent alcoholic at this point, went into recovery. So at 14, that was my first introduction to the steps. And we've always been very close. And I would go to conventions with her and I'd listen to people speak. And I remember just hearing their wisdom and seeing their serenity and knowing that that was something I wanted, but didn't know that, it was available to me. My mum has done exceptionally well with the steps. She is absolutely 100% a different person today, unrecognizable. And one thing that I took away from watching her do the steps is to be thorough and consistent with your 10th step. Because I'm sure there were so many other aspects of her program, but that was what I always saw. And so eating stayed with me throughout this time. I had a lot of different things that I would lean on as a way to cope in childhood. But definitely food was always the core. And I've always been a volume eater. I used every single meal as a way to just black out, really. I never really did very well with diets because I would diet and I would lose maybe a couple pounds. My genes would feel different and I would celebrate by binging. But I was just a very, very angry, very resentful, always seeking validation and believing that that came through achievement, all throughout my 20s, at my teenagers and my 20s. And just life basically was about seeking comfort, just all the time. And I would watch a lot of TV and just eat all day. So in around about 2017, I think it was, my mum started OA. And I remember looking at her and thinking, is this gonna work? Like, this is interesting. And it did work. It did work for her. And I started in 2020. I came in 4 months after lockdown. And I didn't really want it to work, but I knew that it could. And I think I didn't want to stop eating like many of us have shared. I just wanted to be less angry and I wanted to be thin. But I never imagined that I could ever be in a position where I could not have food in my life and not just feel like life was empty. So I think of my recovery is in three stages or three sections. I kind of section it out in my head. The first stage for me was, I got abstinent for my first meeting. I lost weight very, very, like I lost weight continuously. I think I lost about 3.5 stone from July to November. I was kind of working the steps. I worked 1, 2, and 3 with a sponsor, and I hit 4. I stayed on 4 for a year. I don't think I wasn't doing work for a year. I was procrastinating for a year, and that was very, very detrimental for me. I stopped going to meetings probably about 3 months in, started to believe that it was me that was doing it, and that I was the way, I was fine. I was like graduated. Around that time, I was absolutely so. When I look back at that time, I feel like the compulsive overeater in me kind of took a back seat. But rather than tapping into God, the person that came forward was like the super militant, productive version, another part of me. And that person really drove me into the ground. And there was a point in about December. So I came in July, and by December, I had broken my day down on an Excel spreadsheet into 30-minute segments between the hours of 4 a.m. and 10 p.m. about where I needed to be and what I needed to be doing. And I was not the CEO of a company. I was a stay-at-home mum. So there was absolutely no reason for me to live like that. Crazy, but that was where I was at, and I was just really prideful, and I was really still very angry. My stepdad got diagnosed with cancer, and he died very quickly. And when I was in his flat around the time that he was dying, I was surrounded again, like he was still a drug addict. I was surrounded by a lot of people that were taking drugs and drinking. And I remember, and this is one of the beautiful things that I've learned in this recovery about the lies that we tell each other and tell ourselves and the power that that has over us. I remember being stood in his flat, and all of these people were drinking, and they offered me a drink, and I thought, I'm not going to drink, but I will eat all of that dried fruit that's just like in different bags around the tables. And I sat there eating and binging on this food, and I told myself, look at me, look at me. They're all, whatever, and I'm sat here sober. And actually, that denial led me into the second part of my time in OA, which was a period of about 4 years of just constant relapses. And I really at that time used OA as a diet club. I would go to meetings. I would never ever share about my relapses because I had so much shame about them. And I didn't understand the beauty of having this space to share what we need to share as a way to receive love. So I never shared. I would get abstinent. I would come to a meeting, get a little bit of power, receive power from the group. That would give me like a few days, five days a week of abstinence, and then I would relapse because I never looked at my compulsive food behaviors as well. And I didn't know that the compulsive food behaviors for me are like one foot in the door to a relapse. So I remember I was going on like this for a long time, and because I would eat a lot healthier than I ever did when I was really in the food back, I thought I was okay. And then I loved this because I felt like this was a period of my life where God was really illuminating things for me so I could hear it differently. And I was sat in a meeting one day, and I heard the definition of abstinence. Definition of abstinence is the act of refraining from compulsive food. But I'm not going to be able to say it now on the spot. But the part that stuck to me was that I was not working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. I was going in the opposite direction, and I was putting on weight gradually, but it was going that way. And I realized, I heard that, and I thought, I'm not abstinent, and that really like broke a wall of denial for me. And I realized I needed to get a sponsor because I didn't have a sponsor at this time. And I remember hearing who is now my sponsor share her program. Before I had, thought about having her as my sponsor or asking her, and I thought, oh, she's mad. I couldn't do it. I could not do that. And that's too much for me. I couldn't commit to that. It's not maintainable. And anyway, went on to carry on try and find sponsors, and people were saying no, because they were full or whatever, and it wasn't working out. And this voice in my head kept saying, ask that person to be your sponsor. Ask that person. I was thinking, are you mad? We've heard how she works their program. And anyway, one day I just said, okay, right, I'll just ask her. And I asked her, and she told me how she works her program and how she sponsors. And I said, okay. And I've been absent since that day. And that would lead me into the third part of my how I break down my experience of being in the program. And I say I've been absent from that day, but it wasn't that simple as getting a sponsor. It was, I remember really praying for the willingness to be willing, and I've heard that before, and I love that. And what I was given was the willingness to just do basically what someone else told me to do, to let go of cherry picking how I wanted to work the program and how I thought I needed to do it because based on what I thought was right for me, I just said, just tell me what to do. And I did not give myself that willingness. That was such a gift, and I'm so grateful for that. Thank you. Acknowledged. So yeah, reached a deeper level of surrender. And I've so yeah, so what I would feel like this next stage of my recovery has been like is just taking as much and as many actions, especially in the beginning. So when the first couple of weeks of abstinence was hell, it was really, really challenging. The sugar detox was horrible. I just had to work every single tool every single day. I pretty much do still work most of the tools every day. I do a step study, so every single day I write the answer to my questions, and that keeps that writing tool alive for me, and that is so important for me. I think that in step one, I got to see that I had told myself so many lies. And it was those lies that had really kept me in the cycle of relapsing. I would say that I never looked at unmanageability past step one. And the unmanageability, I still struggle with unmanageability. I think that this whole process of putting down the food and seeing things more clearly is giving me an opportunity to practice, just managing things better and learning, growing up almost, learning how much attention do I need to give each thing so that it becomes managed well. And, that's a process of, growing, I suppose. Step two, I learned that, the fear that I would experience as a result of the realization that I was powerless over things would be so difficult to manage that it would kick me into a state of fear, and I would think, right, well, I'm going to manipulate this situation, or I'm going to do something to manage this situation because I can't face the level or the reality of the powerless. And that was where the defects came in. And just building a relationship with a higher power where I could lean into that has been a massive change for me. And I still forget, again, that's another thing that's going to take practice. It's a process of remembering and realizing all the levels that God can help me in my life. I fall into the trap of picking up my defects, and then I remember, like, oh, God can help me in my relationships. God can help me manage my emotions. Step three was realizing that acceptance was a massive, part of handing my will over. First of all, I had to accept what was in front of me and then be willing to work the steps. And one thing that I'm so grateful that I've been gifted with, and I think it's one of the most important parts of my program, and it's totally opposite from how I've lived my whole life, is that I will work my program regardless of what day it is, what time it is, how I feel, if I'm well, if I'm ill, if I'm tired, if I'm happy, if I'm busy, it will just, I just work the program. And I have always been someone that's been run off of my emotions, and that has been what has driven me. And so to see myself doing that, it surprises me because I still have that old voice come in of being like, oh, you've had a busy day. The girls have been wild. It's 9 o'clock at night. You're really going to do your read. And then there's like this sheet that comes down in me of like, I don't even know what it is, but it's like, no, you're doing it, do it. And I just do it. And it surprises me because it's not me. So yeah, and I'll just end on one of the most beautiful things that I have got to experience and in program is the opportunity to give service. And I would always give service, or I would always give, and then I would have my other hand out waiting for it to come back, and I would be waiting where I was going to see that in my life. But what I've realized, or what I'm experiencing, is that when I give service now, it opens up something inside of me. It opens up a space inside of me, and that space is giving me the opportunity to have a deeper connection with my higher power. So I'm no longer waiting for how is this going to materialize on the outside, because I am enjoying getting to feel a deeper love and connection within myself. So with that, I'll end there. Thank you.